Ellie said, "Don't you think you're overstating? What does one of your excavations look like a year later?" "Pretty bad," she admitted. "You don't replant? You don't restore the land after you dig?"
"No."
"Why not?" She shrugged.
"There's no money, I guess."
"There's only enough money to dig, but not to repair."
"Well, we're just working in the Badlands."
"Just the Badlands," Malcolm said, shaking his head. "Just trash, just byproducts, just side effects. I'm trying to tell you that scientists want it this way. They want byproducts and trash and scars and side effects. It's a way of reassuring themselves. It's built into the fabric of science, and it's increasingly a disaster."
"Then what's the answer?"
"Get rid of the thin-telligent ones. Take them out of power."
"But then we'd lose all the advances."
"What advances?" Malcolm said irritably. "The number of hours women devote to housework has not changed since 1930, despite all the advances. All the vacuum cleaners, washer dryers, trash compactors, garbage disposals, wash and wear fabrics. Why does it still take as long to clean the house as it did in 1930?
Ellie said nothing.
"Because there haven't been any advances," Malcolm said. "Not really. 30,000 years ago, when men were doing cave paintings at Lascaux, they worked 20 hours a week to provide themselves with food and shelter and clothing. The rest of the time they could play, or sleep, or do whatever they wanted. And they lived in a natural world with clean air, clean water, beautiful trees and sunsets. Think about it, 20 hours a week, 30,000 years ago.
Ellie said, "You want to turn back the clock?"
"No," Malcolm said. "I want people to wake up. We've had 400 years of modern science, and we ought to know by now what it's good for and what it's not good for. It's time for a change."
"Before we destroy the planet," she said.
He sighed and closed his eyes. "Oh, dear," he said. "That's the last thing I would worry about." In the dark tunnel of the jungle river, Grant went hand over hand, holding branches, moving the raft cautiously forward. He still heard the sounds, and finally he saw the dinosaurs.
"Aren't those the ones that are poison?"
"Yes," Grant said. "Dilophosaurus." Standing on the riverbank were two Dilophosaurs. The 10-foot-tall bodies were spotted yellow and black. Underneath, the bellies were bright green, like lizards. Twin red curving crests ran along the top of the head from the eyes to the nose, making a V-shape above the head. The bird-like quality was reinforced by the way they moved, bending to drink from the river, then rising to snarl and hoot.
Lex whispered, "Should we get out and walk?"
Grant shook his head no. The Dilophosaurs were smaller than the Tyrannosaur, small enough to slip through the dense foliage at the banks of the river. They seemed quick as they snarled and hooted at each other.
"But we can't get past them in the boat," Lex said. "They're poison."
"We have to," Grant said, "somehow." The Dilophosaurs continued to drink and hoot. They seemed to be interacting with each other in a strangely ritualistic, repetitive way. The animal on the left would bend to drink, opening its mouth to bear long rows of sharp teeth, and then it would hoot. The animal on the right would hoot in reply and bend to drink in a mirror image of the first animal's movements. Then the sequence would be repeated exactly the same way. Grant noticed that the animal on the right was smaller, with smaller spots on its back, and its crest was a duller red.
"I'll be damned," he said. "It's a mating ritual." "Can we get past them?" Tim asked.